Welcome to Tilt Talk Radio. Today we're going to be talking about soybeans. In our spotlight, we'll take a look at EPA proposing to eliminate DEF systems. Ag History Minute, we'll talk about the history of soybean cyst nematode. Cool Beans, That's Corny, we'll have some current events. We'll wrap things up with a Field Good Friday. With me today are Bill Schomburg.
Hey guys.
Todd Schomburg.
Hey to all the Tilthies out there.
And I'm Matt Brueger, all with Tilth Agronomy. Been a warm one again, but at least we're getting cool nights.
The humidity is gone.
Yeah,
ooh. That's the nice part. Sounds like it's coming back though.
Yeah,
fairly soon. And
Matt loves humidity.
I do.
It's like his best friend. It's not the heat, Matt.
It's the gosh darn humidity.
And you're right. It's been actually pleasant. Walking corn's been pleasant, except for the pollen everywhere and.
Yes, corn pollen is always around this time of year. Nice coating on your clothes, your hat,
everywhere.
It's not even the pollen either. It's the anthers, those little
yeah.
Like the other day, I was pulling my wallet to pull out the credit card, and like some of those came out, and like in my phone.
I don't think those are legal tender, Todd.
Right? They did not like those. They weren't appreciative of that.
How many anthers to a dollar? I forget again.
Sir, please clean up your mess.
Yeah, usually because of the cooler nights, we get nice dew in the morning. So when you're walking your first cornfields, not only are you wet, but you're covered in anther and pollen. And then it sticks on your rain jacket or whatever for the rest of the day. So it's like a paste.
It turns into like this, yes. With all that pollen and then that little bit of water, you're right, it is like a pollen paste.
It's tasty.
Yeah.
Not really.
No. There's something about that smell, though, that indicates fall.
The corn
pollen smell that you can sort of smell everywhere that is, obviously it's not fall, but maybe the end of summer is a better thing that it really indicates and tells us what's ready.
Heading into the last lap of
of
the corn season. Silage will be here soon.
That's really not that far away now.
No.
We're within a month of that, probably, of some fields. I had a grower tell me that, yes, on Monday, he says, change of plans. I'm like, okay, what's the deal here? All of our corn is going to be chopped now.
Ooh,
okay, that's fine.
Yeah.
Mind you, we planted 87-day grain corn.
So they'll be chopping. They'll
be chopping.
Last week, August, on that probably. So little bit of window. They've got individual bunkers, so they'll just fill a bunker with that. But
sure,
that kind of little zig to the zag there on our plans. But that's farming, I guess.
Yeah.
Improvise, adapt, and overcome.
That's right.
And that gave you more heads. It wasn't like, oh, we should be chopping now. There's time to figure out the plan and, like you said, change the course.
Did you guys make it to Farm Tech?
Yeah.
Matt, you did, right?
Yep, I was there. First day was humid, warm, a little bit of breeze.
Were you in a tent at least? Or
we got like a canopy, yeah. So, and then Wednesday was good. Good amount of people. There's more of a steady breeze. It was a little bit overcast, so you didn't have the direct sun all the time. So it's
was it busy?
Wednesday was. The crowd is on Tuesday was not super big, and then it kind of died off in the afternoon. I don't know if it was because of the heat and the humidity and the lack of air movement, or why exactly it was, but
it's always hard to judge how many people are there.
Right.
I mean, you could kind of feel it when it's not busy, though. So Tuesday must have felt that way, just not as busy. But it's good to hear that it picked up Wednesday. And
where we were, We're close to the, because they do all food trucks.
Yes.
And
how was the food trucks thing? Is that a
is that
pretty
new?
Good?
Is that new?
To I think Farms? They did it new. Last year.
They've too. Done it before. It's yeah. been a couple years.
Sure. But yeah, no, it seems good. I don't know if what the numbers will be when the show's all done. If they'll be happy with their sales. Right near the booth I was helping out with, there was a ice cream and lemonade.
Ooh, they stand. Probably
that
were.
One. That one was killing it. There was always a line. But, yeah, I don't know. It tried a couple different ones. They were pretty good. There was a street taco one, like, right across. That one, so far, is probably the best one I tried. So
that's a cool way to, because you got a big variety then.
Right.
But I also, food trucks aren't set up. But if you have that many food trucks, they could handle it. But they're not necessarily up for a huge crowd. So did there ever, was there any lines that?
Yeah, there were, when you get like that 11:30 to yeah, right 1 o'clock or so run, it seemed like they, you could tell the ones that were busy because they'd have a bigger line.
Yeah.
Some of them, cause it's literally the, you know, the length of Tent City. So they have them pretty much all the way from one end to the other. So I think depending on what, where the people were coming in, like you could tell some didn't have big lines or at least not as steady of a line, whereas the like the north end seemed busier than the south end. But yeah, there were lines in places, and you could tell which ones were the faster serving ones too, because you had like the crowd of people waiting for their stuff. And but yeah, quite a variety. They had barbecue, tacos, subs.
Ooh, barbecue's a local, yeah.
Yeah.
One of our local teachers, her and her husband.
Oh, yeah.
They do that?
Yeah, Bear Creek Barbecue. Yeah, they'll be at like gas station places and then.
Well, they should be there if it's in Bear Creek.
Right. They're literally right there.
Yeah.
And they're very good barbecue.
So if I see that one, I got it.
That's the one.
That's the one to check out.
Check out.
Did you wait 3 hours to get out of the parking lot?
That would never happen.
Wasn't too bad.
Was it 3 hours?
It was a long time. I don't know if it was that long, but
to get out, it was, or to get in.
The first day, wasn't it? Like,
yeah, it was bad. I remember.
Well, the first day when we did it was an evacuation too. So
yes,
fair.
Like literally, everyone was leaving at the exact same time.
Yeah. Yes, there was no evacuation necessary here.
No, weather-wise, I mean, other than being a little on the warm side, the show had pretty good. Pretty good luck there. No, I stayed like the entire time, so.
You're in early and out late.
Right, we got to put stuff away, so.
Yeah.
Wasn't terrible. There was a little bit different traffic pattern Tuesday to Wednesday because of some issues they had the first day.
That's good, because that's always the hard part is you don't know. Like when we edit out a game, you don't know what to expect. You don't know what the traffic's really going to do. And that the first day you have this big problem and a storm that you need to evacuate, and then it wasn't going to go well even without the evacuation. So it's good that they were able to pivot and change some things. And it's been at Clinton's before, so I'm sure that's helped
right
that a lot, that this is the third time, so they can kind of change some things and make sure it's what's worked in the past, I would think, would work well going forward there.
Yeah, unfortunately, the traffic change was a result of people exhibiting less than desirable behavior.
What do you mean?
What I call being a dick.
Oh.
And
what do you mean? People in traffic are super nice and just understand.
Apparently, there were some exhibitors, I don't know where they were from or who they were, mouthing off to state troopers and like ignoring their...
Perfect. Like, I have to get to where...
Right, like, oh, I don't want to be here, I want to get out of here. So they had an exhibitor parking lot, like, right along 22 on the north end of Tent City. And so there's a ditch right there at 22, and apparently people were just, like,
blowing
out through the ditch. And so there's traffic coming, like, out of the driveway, and down the road, and then people were just like, blowing
on.
Out. Yeah.
That's a pretty good... I mean... Your vehicle could do it, but it's not like the flattest ditch ever. It's to a state highway, so you gotta,
So they made an announcement on Wednesday, like, please
Don't Baja
be good to our volunteers who are helping
right.
like get you out, and to the state troopers who will be less friendly if they decide you're worth pursuing.
Yes. So.
But
always has to be one.
Yeah, somebody's got to be that guy.
Yep.
Don't be that guy, Todd.
Don't be a Todd. Todds are that guy sometimes, but I will not be that guy. I will push aside my Todd instincts and
be a nice guy. Be
more like a Matt.
A smart ass? What?
Yeah, but I don't mouth off to cops.
Fair. You know your role.
Right.
So you know your
audience.
Yes. Well, that's good. Glad they had good weather, because that was obviously...
Oh, that can make or break your show.
So many years ago when we did it, that was so stressful.
When it's an outdoor show,
right?
Weather matters a lot. Even like comparing it to now, the EA Oshkosh show, it's somewhat outdoor, but very less weather dependent on things. So yeah, when you get a good stretch of weather, that's great.
And that's the only thing you cannot truly, truly plan for. Is what weather you're going to get when
right.
you show up. You know, you do, what did we do, three years of planning?
3 years of planning, yeah.
Yeah, no, it was
and then
a long, drawn-out process.
Right.
And yeah, I mean, you can plan for, obviously you have tents and stuff, so if there's a little bit of rain or one thing with the humidity and stuff, especially on Tuesday, some of those bigger tents, they put up walls at night to kind of keep the humidity from, or the dew from,
sure.
excuse me, getting in. But it also makes some of those tents real stuffy because the airflow,
sure.
you don't get the airflow until they open it back up. And so I was glad not to be in like some of those bigger tents versus like our canopy provides shade, but you get air movement
yep.
readily. So,
yep. And our show, they have so much difference in weather depending, like, so hot. Then it was that bad storm too on Thursday, right? We had to.
Nope. So the bad storm was Tuesday, which we had to evacuate.
Yep.
Then we had a rain delay Wednesday.
That's what it was.
Because it kept raining then yep. the next morning till.
And it hadn't rained in months.
Right. It was a drought year.
Months maybe is a little push, but it was.
Yeah.
It did not significantly rain in the long.
It was very dry. So that was welcome that it brought a rainstorm. But
and then Thursday was
cold.
Cold. Everyone had almost coats on.
And that, with an outdoor show, would probably be the hardest one to manage. Like, if you somehow got a really cold snap, like, you can put walls on tents and stuff, but a lot of your exhibitors or your equipment's outside. Like, I think the farm show in Oshkosh sometimes gets that. You can tell the really cold
right. years.
People are less likely to wander around outside. Right. They're going to want to stay in.
Man.
And that limits traffic for some exhibitors. So,
yep.
But yeah, and football is back.
It's back.
Ooh. Yeah, that when you could smell the corn pollen, you know football is right around the corner.
So Packers play Saturday this week?
They do play. I don't know if it's a real...
Because they had family night.
Classify that as a real game or not. I guess it's a real game.
It's preseason, so it's getting the third stringers and the everybody else a chance to prove themselves to make the roster, because the roster will get smaller and smaller as the month goes on.
Jets, I believe.
The JE.
I don't even know when it's preseason. I don't know how you guys can follow that. Obviously, they need to do that. They need to have practice games, but it's just not. They're turning less and less into, like, real game. You know,
they're more of a scrimmage, really.
Right, which is fine. But you still, you know, pay season ticket holders still have to pay for those tickets, and they still make money on them, which again, last preseason, I went with my daughter, and we had a good time. It was kind of fun because you don't care if they win or lose at all. You know, it's
sure.
just a fun outcome where you're not angry if they lose, and you know, at that game, there was like a kicker battle going on. It was Carlson and some, I forgot, whoever the guys were. But anyways, so it's fun to watch.
Greg Joseph?
You're right. It was.
Yeah. That one, yeah.
It was.
It's Saturday, 7 p.m. against the J-E-T-S.
Jets, Jets, Jets.
Jets, 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 yep.
It's funny, family night last weekend, so we were going to Minnesota, and we stopped in Wausau for lunch on our way there, and there were people coming from Minnesota to go to family night. Because like, you could see, we stopped at a Culver's, and there just like Packer jerseys everywhere.
So really?
These people like that were traveling. And we happened to sit next to them, and we're overhearing them talk about the game and stuff, and the guy's like, oh, yeah, it's for kids, you know, they do this game for kids, whatever, and I'm just a Lambeau fan. The guy was saying, like, he just likes to go see the stadium, and
but a Lambeau fan, yeah, that's great. I could see that.
But I did have to laugh, because he was singing the praises of how cheap, like, the tickets are for family night and all this, and what a good thing that is that they do, and but then saying how the hotels still gouge you. Like it's a regular Packer game when you try, like, cause they were going to stay overnight before heading back. And so it was kind of interesting to hear that dynamic of, like, I enjoy going because it's, you know, it's reasonably priced entrance and all and good activity, but the hotel sucks. So, but I can't imagine, never had to stay in a hotel downtown Green Bay, but I did stay recently in a hotel downtown Atlanta, and I'm betting Green Bay is still cheaper than that.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, I don't think we have a concept of how really cheap it is. Just listening to the radio over the summer, they got on that topic about cost of NFL games in general, like your family cost, what would it take to go, and hotel, yep, and all that. And even the tickets are still cheap compared to other. I mean, they were talking about, you know, when the Packers, was it last year, went to Vegas, you know, and it's probably $500-$700 a night.
Right. And what, yeah, because we don't have season tickets. What is face value of a ticket? Do you guys know offhand?
$150?
No, they're more. $200? No, it's two something.
Two something now? Yeah. But I mean, like a big concert, like, somewhere, yeah, like, you're probably paying the same price.
It's that expensive now for
that too, yeah, kind of thing, too, so. And I'm sure other, like, yeah, I don't know how much parity there is, like, across the board, like, if all teams' tickets are similarly priced, or if, you know, the bigger markets like Vegas or something, I imagine they're more expensive.
Yeah.
But I wonder if they do football games on the Sphere. Like, do they broadcast it inside?
That'd be cool.
There?
Yeah.
Like, so you can sit in the Sphere and look at
it.
Watch the game around you. But anyway, you guys ready to talk some soybeans?
Yeah.
All right. What do you got for us today, Bill?
Sure. So this is the time of year that every week, as the weeks go on, my scouts get more and more frustrated.
Walking soybeans.
Soybean.
Okay.
I understand that frustration.
Oh,
it's like, do we have to look at this again? We've looked at these three straight weeks. Why again?
Soybeans are the great, like, lodging,
right,
tripping hazard. Right. Like, they'll just grab your feet while you're trying to walk through.
Yep.
Especially in row spacing. Like if they're, yeah, they're 30-inch row, you got
a 50-50 chance, though, that
pretty
still going to be tough.
Oh, yeah. They're not. They're no picnic. But 30-inch row, you at least have a little bit of a walking path. 15s, and then you get to drilled beans, and it's just it's a tangled mess, basically, of that.
Yeah. Most of the growers I work with do have rowed beans of some kind, whether that's 19 up to 30s. I only have one significant grower that has a significant amount of acres that drills beans, and I got to hear about that yesterday because my scouts were in them yesterday. And, of course, they're between, you know, the bad ones are at your knees and the good ones are now at your chest in some spots. So, you know, they're struggling with that. But I just thought, kind of chat about different things we're seeing in the soybeans and kind of talk of, is it normal, is it not normal, what should we do about it? So surprisingly this year, we haven't, I think, Matt, you even put on our group chat the other day, like, you found your first aphid.
Yep.
Really not at all of an issue that I've seen in any fields. It took us probably 3 weeks of really intense scouting before we started to see some, and now we're starting to see more, but I mean, at this point, we're probably a week away or 10 days away from them, you know, starting their descent back into the wilderness.
They're the last pick of the draft. They're Mr. Irrelevant. They came in too late.
At least this year they are, yeah.
This year, yeah.
Yep. So, I mean, we're seeing between, you know, 5 to 10 to maybe 25 on a plant. I don't know if you guys are seeing more or less.
But,
or,
yeah, it's...
Yeah, they weren't significantly...
And it's surprising how many fields still have very little to none. Just
right.
None.
Yeah, the field I found them in, it was... Had tree line on half the field, so it was surrounded by woods. There was grass, horse pasture, like, so it was kind of a little, and it's low ground, so that was really the only place I was finding them. Other fields, just really wasn't seeing much of anything. So
I'm wondering if the, you know, we had such problems with, you know, wheat emerging and our alfalfa emerging because we had such an open winter. I wonder if the cold weather, not open so much, but the cold weather affected what was able to survive on the buckthorn.
Sure.
Over the winter.
Right. It was less. That's a good point.
You know, I don't know if that's, I guess I'm not a true entomologist, but at the same point, I'm wondering if that's part of it.
You just play one on TV.
I play one on the radio. So that was a nice thing that we don't, you don't have these pop-up fields where all of a sudden, you know, we've all had those where there's thousands of them on a plant. And then two things I could see happening this year is soybeans aren't worth anything, and we haven't had rain here now for 2 or 3 weeks or more. So it's like, well, it's dry, and they aren't worth anything. Why do I want to spend any money? So I'm kind of glad we didn't have to really make that decision this year. That was a welcome sight.
Yeah, it's funny how, I mean, aphids are tiny, but when you get those really bad fields, how much it like kind of makes your skin crawl. When you're in that field and you're like, oh, like I'm covered in aphids now because you've, how many are on this plant and I've been walking through this field, like, you know they're all over you.
And you kind of feel, I don't know if slimy is the right word.
Like we were talking about the corn pollen paste before, but I agree with Matt. About the worst is the sort of sap or stickiness from the aphid.
Yep.
Yeah. Because especially too, like, I don't know how anybody walking beans wears shorts. I could never wear shorts, so I'm always jeans or my rain pants. And when you're done, like your jeans rain pants.
So you just take your jeans off, just crawl into the rain
pants. Just one or the other, yes.
Good to know.
Your jeans are just like sticky, like cardboard. Like they just make them hard if you walk a lot of soybeans in general. So yes, it is a quite a treat for when there's that many aphids out there. How many lady beetles have you guys found? So natural enemies out there yet? Usually when that population kind of slowly ramps up, the natural enemies have time to kind of be there, but in these high aphid fields, did you see those as well that you're kind of like, well, they're here, but
I didn't notice a significant amount of lady beetles in that particular field. But I will say, in general, in fields this year, I have seen a lot of lady beetles and a lot early. So when I was doing some of the slug work we did earlier this summer, and we were going around and checking traps and stuff, early on, I was seeing a lot of ladybugs in fields, especially soybean fields early. So I think just they had a good presence out there this year. And I'm guessing like aphids flock to soybeans, like the lady beetles flock to aphids.
That's so right.
I don't know if it's a smell thing or how ladybugs hunt, like what makes them know where the aphids are. But,
It's interesting you say that, Matt, because in alfalfa fields, we saw as pea aphid became like, oh, there's more out here than I'd like, the lady beetles were kind of there taking care of that population. And still finding some pea aphids in fields, and some are kind of higher than others, but not necessarily a lot in alfalfa fields. So maybe those populations too will move or migrate into the soybean fields to sort of take care of that. There's been past years that I swear we can affect that when you have alfalfa next to soybeans, since they have that kind of similar need for the good bugs, that they tend to kind of help out each other, that we've seen more good bugs and less bad bugs in that case. So hopefully some of those will kind of help out our soybean fields as they move up. And like I said, would you guys agree that in general we just haven't seen many bugs this year?
None, yeah.
Yeah. It's like been a very low bug year.
Low bugs in general.
In general. I mean,
it's just not.
Corn, just some isolated, you know, we had the armyworm and sorghum.
Yeah.
Yep.
We had
some armyworm and corn. And I mean,
conventional corn.
That's a good word for that, Matt. It's not to say there hasn't been them, because guys that listen might be like, well, I had an armyworm problem that, but just in general, even
targeted,
that was such a specific area to a couple acres that was bad as well. So
I ran into another consultant at Farm Tech Days and was asking him, you know, what are you seeing? What have you been having issues with? And he was kind of the same thing, like isolated, just at a pocket where he thinks they moved out of a older grassy hay field into the corn next door, and ended up treating the field because they were really hammering the outside rows and was concerned that they were going to just keep moving through. So,
how about white mold? Any dead leaves at the top that you're seeing that you're going to follow down to that white mold?
I found my first white mold this week.
Yeah.
And the leaves at the top weren't even dead yet.
Ooh, I was going to say that so far just found a little bit of the marshmallowy stuff.
Yep.
Down below. Cotton. Which I don't, there's, that just makes me want to throw up in my mouth thinking about that feeling, because it always happens on the best fields.
Right.
The fields that look just tremendous, they're, you know, look so nice, and then all of a sudden this time of year they just fall off the rails and just you get white mold that this, to it early August usually kind of shows up maybe in a few pockets, and then if it shows up that much in early August, usually then by late August and September you've got it kind of
spread
through the field more.
I'm surprised, at least at this point, how many of my fields don't.
Like, I would agree.
Like you said, like, as good as they look, there's still a lot of fields that we haven't. Now that we don't look at every plant. Well, but you can.
But I would agree with you, Bill, that in general it's hopefully better this year than we thought. But I think there's still going to be enough fields that get it.
My biggest surprise was that this particular field, and there's other factors at play, but it was a 30-inch.
Oh, I was just going to ask you that. Oh,
soybean.
No. Yeah,
but it was one of the best ones on the farm, where it was essentially canopy. Not 100%, but had cover. Where other 30-inch row fields on the farm, there's a couple that aren't fully canopied yet, and it was planting date essentially. Is probably the difference.
It was planted earlier.
This one was planted earlier. Got manure.
Yeah. Okay, and those two.
Right, those two factors are
early planting with manure is like the kiss of death for white mold.
No, and we had this discussion. They did try some treatment thing that their seed dealer had that was supposed to help with white mold, and
it could have helped.
It might have helped. Yeah, I don't know.
It's hard.
And then my favorite, not favorite part of this whole scenario is then they ask about the fungicide. Like, you talk about fungicide in the off season, you know, like, you know, we're going to do this, like, you know, last time we did this, we had white mold issues. Like, yeah, we'll see. And this treatment was supposed to help. And then it's like, well, should we look at fungicide? It's like, no, it's there.
I mean, we can, but.
But yeah, you could make it
happen. It can help. Yeah.
Yeah.
But it is a tough call, that it's more preventative. I've been. And maybe you guys can maybe tell if my analogy is too soon, but I've been using the COVID vaccine analogy now because it's long enough ago of when to do it. And a lot of these fungicides in general are preventative, not curative. So when a guy says that to me, it's like, well, at this, you know, this point, if you got sick or got something, you can't take the vaccine anymore, but there's other treatments that maybe would help make it a little better, but also there, you know, there, it's kind of past it a little bit, but I still seen if you catch it early enough and stuff, you can kind of seem to slow the spread from getting really bad.
Yeah. But I mean, it's, we're, I don't know where your soybeans are at, but these were filling pods.
Like, oh yeah.
So, I mean, we're getting pretty late in the season that.
Yeah.
Yep.
And the inoculum came in the flowers. So, I mean, it's.
Right. That part of it, those are already infected.
Right.
You're just trying to kind of help slow that and help the later flowers that might still be at the top.
Right.
From getting it as well.
I'll be curious. I have several farms that did spray. But two farms in particular, there was acreage that they decided to spray and acreage that they didn't. They decided not to spray. Different reasons, but last week in our scouting rounds, both farms, the fields that they did spray are clean and the fields they didn't. Now we're starting to see some white mold starting to come in. So that'll be a good... Hopefully by the end of the season, that'll be a good barometer on, okay, we spent our money because, you know, the reason they didn't was they're like, well, those fields aren't normally water or white mold fields and it's so expensive and beans aren't worth anything. So let's just do the ones we know have it really bad. Okay, that's fine. And now I'm going to kick myself for not pushing a little harder to just do all of them.
Sure.
But... Yeah. Is what it is, I guess, at this point. So that'll be a good test for me to determine, you know, should we be looking at this a little harder, especially on those fields. I think we should make like a map. You know, you should have a map of every field that you scout and just make sure you
check them off or whatever.
And say this is a white mold field, because when we do this rotation thing, it's like it's hard to remember.
That is a question I ask
2 years from now.
Do you remember white mold? You know, and then we kind of think back. But it's hard with that, too, is you only remember when it got really bad.
Yeah.
And there's a few where it was there. Well, those are the ones, you know, the inoculums there then. Right. So, yeah, I agree. The other hard part is fungicides aren't necessarily great at white mold.
Mm-hmm.
They're good. I'm not saying they're
No, they bad. Seem to mitigate the issue, but they don't.
It's
usually it doesn't.
It's more of a suppression than a control.
Right.
And so that part can be tricky. So there's a few, you know, that are maybe better. There's some newer ones, and we're getting newer ones all the time, of fungicides that are going to get better and better at it, which is great. So it is going to be more of a thing. And then the timing part, do you need two applications, R1 and R3?
Right.
Do you just do R1? Do you just do R3? And there's all kinds of research or scenarios. It really comes down to when you get the white mold weather,
right,
and the conditions for white mold. You probably want to be spraying that to kind of help control that. So,
is your friend water hemp poking out now?
Yeah.
This is always an interesting time of year where you just, every field looked clean 2 or 3 weeks ago. But if you scouted them and you knew digging down below, you knew where the water hemp was or wasn't. And, yeah, so, but this time of year, all of a sudden, yeah, it kind of peeks out from behind the canopy and just slowly starts poking its head out.
Waves.
Think of it, yeah, like the same concept as volunteer corn. You know, the joke is, yeah, it's raising its hand, letting you know it's there. Well, yeah, the water hemp just kind of like,
I think that water hemp gives us the middle finger, not
yeah.
raising
middle finger, yeah.
You tried to kill me.
I'm back.
Well, that's true. This time of year, too, it's varying degrees of, you have, like, potential, say that you didn't use, on your second pass, you didn't use a one with, that would have a residual control. It might be new ones, kind of, that
right.
came, it, or...
Yeah, there's new ones out there right now popping
right.
out of the ground
right.
in bare spots.
In
or,
spots where yeah. you didn't canopy. Or it could be the ones that kind of you were able to really maim back with our herbicide, with sort of Enlist or Liberty, and then this is just sort of it kind of the zombie plant.
The Lazarus weed.
Yes.
Yes.
Coming back. The Lazarus weed, yeah.
That's Bill's. That I think you coined that on our group chat. Was it last year, 2 years ago?
Jesus weed.
Jesus weed, yeah.
Yep. Yep. I can't take credit for that. Jim gets all the credit, but yep. That's and it got to a point a couple weeks ago, like, okay, it's there, but we're full flower now and we're going back on fungicide. Should we add in the add in some more Liberty or Enlist? And it was just like we didn't kill it the first time. It's
right.
It's shaded with all the soybeans, so we know there's growing points we didn't hit the first time because they were probably shaded by the soybeans. I really feel like, do we have to go to 3-pass residual? Like, does that make any sense? Well, like, do your early, then instead of waiting a month, go 2 weeks or go 3 weeks and then go another three? Like, we're not getting it with our post. We're just not. Even this double punch of Liberty and Enlist is okay.
You seem to be beat down this year. I actually felt and it's too early to maybe say this, but I, in the battle or the war on water hemp, I don't think we won the battle, but we're definitely didn't necessarily lose it this year either. What would be the term, Matt, in military fighting? We're basically
a war of attrition.
Like it was just a draw almost. Like,
yeah.
Like the fields that you're saying are a problem, those had so much weed seed bank from years ago.
Fair.
That enough of those, I told the farmer, like, you're going to get more of the bank, but this is a long-term problem that a one-year thing isn't going to necessarily fix, or we're not going to go that far backwards either.
Well, and we had this discussion on an earlier podcast. You know, the earlier we're planting year on and year on, like, the prees for water hemp are going to do less and less because the lock is running out.
They aren't emerging at that
so,
time.
Like you're saying, Bill, right. you've got to have some sort of, you have to almost rethink your strategy when it comes to water hemp of like the pre's not really going to do it. What else can we do to manage the water hemp once it arrives?
It also seems to be in general, it's a corn bean rotation, but I have certain fields that have bad wet years that then really make it worse. So if we think about 2 years ago, we were actually pretty dry. So it wasn't as bad of a water hemp year. So then, like, this year on some of those shouldn't have been as bad of a water hemp year. And maybe it was a little worse, but ones that I had it bad in the corn last year, I do feel we were able to at least control or keep at bay. If I was able to hit the right timings in the right, basically, you know, a pre or an early post, and then followed up with something. At that time, we weren't sure if we needed the residual control in there or not, and I would agree with you, Bill. We really did. You know, it did help in there in most cases that it just held it held it longer, which we'd expect it to do. So that'll be a tricky one for next year's farms that I don't put that real late residual in. Are we going to add it? Some of those we did fine without it. But it goes back to like water hemp size you can't kill it when it gets over 6 inches, 4 inches. I don't know what number but it's short.
It's short.
It is not, you know, when you get a foot tall water hemp, it's, we're just looking at holding them back
right
at that point rather than really trying to kill them anymore. And that is a scary thought that maybe we didn't lose the battle this year. But at the same time, we're going back to the drawing board going like, where are we at for, man, help me out on turf, where are we at? Our tanks aren't working, our airplane, whatever we have, the tools.
Right, we're throwing everything with the kitchen sink at them.
Right, and so we're going back to everybody going like, what do we do? What do we got back here, guys, for, new sort of weapons? Because our current weapons are kind of average right now at best.
But you make a point, though, Todd. I was talking to a grower yesterday, and we have one or two fields that has a lot of escapes, and then the rest of them look really good, and we were trying to figure out what it was.
Right.
And in talking with them, we both agreed that the field in particular that's the worst, the water hemp was taller at the time of second pass.
Yep.
Yep.
It was 6 to 8 inches, whereas the other fields, they were one or two inches.
They were small. Yes, very small.
So
I would agree that we as well saw that in that. And unfortunately, there was about a week in there where water hemp, I swear to you, went from 1 inch to like 12 inch. Like,
yeah.
It was fair week, because I remember where all of a sudden it was like, so it would have been late June, and it went from being like, okay, guys, you know, we kind of got to spray, to like, you got to spray now. Like, it is go time on it. And if you kind of weren't ready for that, or people got behind, or this year, really, it wasn't even the applicator's fault. It rained enough where you couldn't get in the field then and control it when you wanted to, and then it was kind of a little bit
Sunday crazy. Affair, you guys were down.
It was insane. There was flooding in a way.
Yeah,
you know,
flooding
in
the fairgrounds,
So, yes, Bill, it just... So that part hurt us in that if our timing got thrown off by weather, we couldn't...
My worst fields are a combination of that and the sprayer being broken down, so the guy didn't get there right away, and they actually ended up having another applicator come in and do the job, but by then enough time had elapsed that it became taller and more of an issue. So
one thing I think, if you do have fields that don't look good, dig roots. Had a couple of fields the growers, like, you know, we kind of were watching them, and the growers like, why doesn't that one look good? Well, started digging roots, and they worked it wet this spring. There was a tillage layer there, and the soybean, the roots just did crazy things. And
I had a field where it was muck soils, and in the muck spots, looked really bad up until probably about a week and a half, 2 weeks ago. It just
I will say the fields I'm talking about look better this week than last.
Yeah,
but the roots were definitely affected by that. That tillage layer in the wet. They worked it wet.
Yep. So, last thing, because it came up at Farm Tech Day, somebody made this comment, and I'm curious to see your opinions on it. So, we were talking about how good, you know, corn looks, and even beans outside of, you know, a few issues here look good. And he said, it just seems when we get the smoke, beans do better.
Better?
Yeah, that was his opinion. He said, and I thought that was an interesting take.
I've actually heard like the opposite.
Right.
Yeah.
So I was,
You know, when we get smoke, because we're just muting the sunshine.
We're diffusing sunlight, it doesn't have the same.
Beans have basically had many cloudy days as far as they're concerned.
Yeah.
So I don't, the way the beans look, the amount of flowers, the amount of pods looks good. The amount of beans per pod, maybe not great at this point. So I don't know yet. I think the jury is still out on that.
Yeah. Yeah. I just thought that was interesting. So
we'll see what that happens. I feel like it'll either be an excuse if they don't yield well.
Right.
Or if they do yield well, it'll be some sort of like, this helped us. And
we want the wildfires.
And I don't know that it is, like, I don't know that we really know yet, because there's obviously...
We've only had, experience with it really the last couple of years in any meaningful way. You know, we had, was it 2 years ago, the really bad. Last year wasn't really as bad. And now this year we've had more days with affected by it, so... And it was a drought year a drier year the first time we had the significant wildfire smoke. So,
what is interesting is I remember last year and years past when we had this problem, and the more reading I did, it was interesting, is it can have both positive and negative impacts on yield. So it will be, obviously it can hinder photosynthesis and kind of diffuse that sunlight, but it can add, more positive stuff with basically giving you a little bit different nutrient, in that ash and
the ash fertilizers
kind of stuff. So it's just a different.
And that was his theory was, I don't know if it's the ash comes down and does something to the soybean, and it's like, well, ashes can be fertilizer. I mean, it's
right,
not.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. The other part I think I've seen, if we are 90 plus degrees for a long time, well, then that wildfire smoke can actually help be it, you know, right. when you, it's too
the intensity
hot.
Of yes.
So it's just this, it almost might come down to, yeah, when you actually do get, that's the other part. It's not like wildfire smoke comes the second week of August all the time or
right.
something like that. It's just whenever, and it might have had it happened on a few days this year that sort of hurt us.
And it won't, we're in early August here. If it doesn't rain in the next 3 weeks, which it looks like there's some better chances now, but it won't matter.
Right.
If it don't rain, it doesn't matter. So,
yeah.
But again, I think you're right, Todd. I was listening to the Fabulous Farm Babe on the way in this morning.
Hey. And
she had a mint farmer on.
Okay.
And I kind of was in and out a little bit, but he was very concerned for his mint crop with the wildfire smoke. So
any specific?
He didn't say why. He just was like,
well, mint is a very, very different crop.
I think some of it was just they must cut it like alfalfa and windrow it.
Yep.
And he was talking about how difficult it is to dry.
Right.
Well, it's funny you say I've had, farmers and then one of our guys at Tilth, too, that was had to chop some hay and basically they were getting delayed by certain days because it didn't dry when you had the wildfire smoke.
Sure.
So, yeah, it's just funny because he was like, well, I thought you were chopping today. And he's like, no, blame Canada is all he said. And then I'm like, okay, I follow you now. So, yes, it changed our weather in different ways that obviously can affect things positively or negatively.
All right. So there you go. There's some thoughts on soybeans for this week. And don't forget this fall to do some SCN testing to make sure you're doing the best thing you can for your soybean crop for next year. Now we'll move into our spotlight for today. So EPA is proposing the potential for eliminating DEF systems in ag equipment. So they're proposing rescinding the 2009 greenhouse gas endangerment finding. Nebraska Farm Bureau President Mark McHager tells Brownfield that there could be a welcome change for producers with frequent and costly repairs due to DEF. 80% of repairs are emissions related, according to him. So during a meeting with Farm Bureau presidents last month, EPA officials were considering changes to portions of the Clean Air Act, and that's really one of the more fascinating conversations with EPA that they're actually seriously looking at the issue, according to McHargew. Earlier this week, EPA Administrator Lee Zeldin proposed rescinding the 2009 greenhouse gas endangerment finding that enabled EPA to regulate emission standards for new motor vehicle engines. While the finding doesn't include DEF requirements, it paves the way for regulations that led to requiring DEF in diesel engines under the Clean Air Act. So it'll be interesting to see. I know now, like, I think in the early days of DEF, one of the biggest issues was the DEF and the fuel didn't necessarily go down together. Like, sometimes you had to fill in one or the other. But, we'll see how things go. All right, now we'll move into our Ag History Minute. Maybe, Todd? There we go.
He's there.
Got it.
All right, so this week we're going to talk soybean cyst nematodes, since we're talking soybeans. So soybean cyst nematode, or SCN, was initially discovered in North America in 1954. Agronomists identified it on 6 farms in North Carolina. Today, SCN has become the top yield-robbing pest in soybeans. It's found in nearly every soybean-growing county throughout the U.S. and Canada, with the exception of West Virginia and Prince Edward Island, Canada. Improved genetics and management help farmers fight this microscopic parasite that feeds on soybean roots. Farmer-funded research has played a critical role in developing tools to manage SCN, as detailed in the 70 Years of Progress Fighting Soybean Cyst Nematode in North America. Includes an overview of the pest, how checkoff funds have been and continue to be invested. A national strategic SCN research plan, timeline showing the spread of SCN alongside research to develop solutions and more. Although it's been in North America for at least 70 years, the story of the pest and its management solutions began decades earlier. Detailed timeline shows that the USDA researchers collected a soybean variety with a native resistance to SCN in 1906 before the pest was identified in Asia and soybeans became a common crop in North America. The timeline explains how foresight of farmers, agronomists, and scientists developed a research infrastructure to tackle complex challenges. That preparation allowed research for SCN solutions to start and ramp up quickly as the threat became clear. Soybean farmers and checkoff boards throughout the country understand that a challenge like SCN requires sustained commitments to and investments in basic and applied research. Starting in the 1990s, the National Soy Checkoff and the North Central Soybean Research Program, or NCSRP, built on past research efforts and provided a steady supply of funding for regional and national research on important soybean issues. So, as we know, there's genetics out there. We've talked about it on the podcast before. And seeing some limitations because of how the technology or how the traits have been used. But hopefully, as we continue to monitor and do a better job of scouting and testing for these things, we'll be able to stay ahead of the problem.
All right. Thank you, Matt. Thank you to our listeners out there. Please subscribe to the podcast and tell a farmer friend. It's real easy. Just search Tilth Talk Radio on Apple Podcasts or on your Android phone. You're going to need to download an app like Podcast Addict. You can also listen on your computer or smartphone browser. Go to tilthag.com/podcast, and you can follow us on Facebook and X at Tilth Talk Radio. And we've got over 300 episodes now, so we must be good.
We've got a wide selection for you to listen to. If you don't like one, just try another.
There's a lot of content. I don't know how good it is, but it's there. Please listen. There. No, please tell a farmer friend. That's all we ask. We appreciate all our listeners. And thank you for, getting us this far to 300 episodes. 301.
And episode 300 has a bonus at the end. If you listened to it but didn't listen all the way to the end, you might have missed it. So.
It's in there, Matt. And there is about almost 30 seconds of dead air. So I think people just thought,
ooh,
yeah.
Need to tighten that up.
Well, it was like a kind of on purpose for fun thing. So and then you,
it's an Easter egg.
Get into the
circle
get
back
into the wrap. So
circle
so
back.
So if you didn't let it play out, check it out. All right. Now we'll move into our cool beans. That's corny and some current events. So cool beans?
Cool beans.
Cool beans.
Cool beans. Our cool beans this week. Cheese prices have climbed to six-week highs as exports hit records. So it took only 7 sessions for the CME spot blocks to jump 16 cents. Spot prices landed the highest level since mid-June and closer to the top end of the recent $1.60 to $1.90 trading range. Cheese futures moved mostly higher, but seemed to brush off some of the spot market strength. Exports continue to support the prices, and the U.S. remaining the cheapest cheese in the world and reaching record highs in June. At the same time, export competitiveness has likely capped how high spot prices can run in the near term. So markets climbed quite a bit on cheese, and that's good news for milk and everything else because it takes milk to make cheese. So cool beans, eat more cheese. In our That's Corny this week, a lot of corn growers are alarmed by the fact that glyphosate may be going away and atrazine is at risk as well, as both were mentioned in the MAHA, or Make America Healthy Again, report. So as we've talked a few times, there's some question on technologies, some issues on production side as Bayer's looking to potentially get rid of glyphosate as a product in their portfolio. So 3 technologies, glyphosate, atrazine, and chlorpyrifos, were called out in the report. And with Roundup or glyphosate and atrazine being two major players in the, especially the corn world when it comes to herbicide. That's very concerning. So a lot of farmers are worried about the potential future there. So we'll see what happens. And now we'll wrap things up with a Field Good Friday. This week, 11 states reporting dented corn. We were talking about being in that last lap, and some are a little closer to the finish line than others. So North Carolina, Texas, Tennessee, Kentucky, Missouri, Iowa, Kansas, even Wisconsin has reported some dented corn, along with Illinois, Nebraska, and North Dakota. So North Dakota is at about 1%, Nebraska 1%, Illinois the same, Wisconsin 3% has reached dented, Kansas at 4%, Iowa 9%, Missouri 10%, Kentucky 20%, and Tennessee 30% of corn is there. Texas, it should be no surprise to anyone, 64% of Texas corn is there, and North Carolina is at 71%. So, won't be long, guys. We'll be seeing those dented cobs.
Excited.
I almost don't believe those numbers. Like that Wisconsin, we could be at 3% versus like states near us that are under, and North Carolina at 71. That's awesome. And yeah, unreal. So
yeah, it's ahead of the 5-year average for us, which is the 5-year average is 1% by now. So yeah. Well, that'll do it for this week. Thanks for being here, guys.
Thanks for having us, Matt.
So this week we talked about soybeans and some of the issues or lack of issues we're seeing out in the field. And remember to do those SCN tests this fall. You get a couple free ones. In our spotlight, we talked about EPA proposal to eliminate DEF systems in ag equipment. Ag History Minute, we talked about the history of soybean cyst nematode. Cool beans this week, cheese prices climbing. That's corny. Corn growers worried about herbicide. It's going away. And in our Field Good Friday, dented corn is out there, and there's only going to be more of it. So thanks for listening. As always, happy farming.